I don't know if I think Mike had said this at one time, but I thought it was very cool that the first column deals with physical stuff, the physical world around us.
It's in the tips.
The second column deals with our thinking, the mental aspect of how we sort of mentally look at these things. The third column deals with our emotions, how our emotions are affected. And the fourth column deals with the spirit and the truth and the spiritual aspect of what's going on here. So it's interesting because, again, these inventories are very thorough and very to the root of our problem and deal with all aspects of us, the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual. So it's kind of interesting. Another statement that we thought we'd impress you with.
That would be tip number 14.
Okay. 2 a.m.
Yeah. That was when he was snorting coffee grounds.
We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it, the first three columns, carefully. Homework assignment, including myself. Make a list of all the people, institutions, or principles that you're currently pissed off at, or resentful, or whatever. That little tweak that happens inside. They're not doing what I want them to be doing. On and on and on.
And something Mike also said, I thought that I've stolen. Some people are like, well, I haven't seen that person in 10 years. I don't even know if I'm pissed at them anymore. Mm. And a good question to ask is, let's say you were walking down the street and you ran into them. Would you get that scent, that tweak of, I'm really uncomfortable about seeing them? Then you probably have resentment, put it down. So that's a good barometer, so to speak. Sorry to interrupt.
And then take a look at the second column and write down it exactly what they have done. Or sometimes it's hard for me to explain inventory like I would to a newcomer, because I know the truth about this deal. So what I want to say now, and what I will say now, is that the second column is for me to write down what I think they did to me to piss me off. And I even find out later on that that becomes a lie. But nonetheless, if we can do... You know, unless this is like, if you're like me, my second, for me, I guess the first three or four steps I did, and again, Bill and I shoot from the angle of, we like to go through the first 9 steps while living in 10, 11, and 12, and I like to go through the steps on an annual or semi-annual basis, and I've been doing that ever since I was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years sober. But about 2.5 years lapse from my first inventory to my second inventory. So the size of the inventory increased, you know. Plus I was pretty much brain dead when I did my first one anyway. So a lot of names in the second one popped up that could have been or possibly should have been. I don't want to say that. They could have been on the first inventory. I was just not awake enough to see it, you know. And luckily, in the meantime, those resentments didn't drag my butt out and kill me. So what happened to me the first 3 or 4 times writing inventory was that the list increased. So I know a lot of people, their first inventory have like 100 names or 50 names or whatever. You know, so maybe you're only going to be able to complete the first 2 columns within the next week. The important thing is, you know, to make a beginning and to make an effort. And when I'm inventory, discipline is extremely important for me because I am an extremely undisciplined person, especially when it comes to inventory writing. And I need to set a certain amount of time per day, and I usually like to try to take an hour. And you know, lately the mornings just work better for me. And this is just my own personal thing. If I wait till the end of the night, I always have the excuse that Melrose Place or something is on, or I'm just tired, or tonight would be a good night to pick a fight with the wife, you know. And my ego wants to really do things to get me out of writing inventory, and it's interesting to watch that. So when I'm in this phase of our development, I like to include this as part of my morning prayer and meditation. And then the third column on these particular sheets, we just have check marks. If you're doing it in a notebook, you can write out the seven areas of self that are affected. I usually find now on average, and again, I've been doing this for a while, I find that on an average, five out of the seven areas of self are usually affected for each resentment. I usually hit five out of seven.
It's not seven out of seven.
Yeah, and a friend of ours calls that a full Monty or a wipeout, you know, and quite often that happens as well. Are there any questions? Great, we must have explained it pretty well until Herb had a question.
That's right. After we do this, what's the format going forward with the meetings here? Are we just going to keep reading chapters, or are we going to kind of do, not necessarily expose what this is in front of the group, but how are we going to check ourselves?
We're going to, I would say within two weeks, 3 weeks tops, we'll have our four steps completed, and then hopefully the same week that we wrap up inventory in the book, as far as direction-wise, we can touch on the directions for the fifth step, and then that'll give you ammunition to go ahead and share your fifth step with your sponsor or members of the group, or however you want to do it, whether it be a one-on-one fifth step or multiple fifth steps where you do several one-on-ones, and then we like to suggest 6 and 7 and even 8 in the same evening as your fifth step, and then start amends from there. Once we get past inventory, I see, as far as weeks go, 5, 6, and 7.
No, I was just concentrating on 4.
On 4.
I don't know about everybody else. I've written, but I've never gone through the experience. So I may be a little bit behind everybody. You asked me before whether anybody hadn't written. Well, I have written, but I'm here, starting from scratch to rewrite it, but
right.
I've never taken it through. So I got a question about how I check myself in terms of what I'm...
I don't get it. You've never done a fifth step, or...?
No. I'm a first time, except I wrote everything before I got here.
Okay.
You're just wondering what's expected going forward.
Right.
Well, if you choose to, as far as I think is what's going to happen is that for anyone who wants to write inventory in the group, they're going to do that. You know, and if you feel you're current and you don't need to do that,
I came here to learn more than what I did, but I'll go through the exercise. But I'm just for me, because it's the first time, never having really explained it. Anybody, I'm just looking about how do I check, what I'm doing here. Because, today I understand what you're having us do with the format, but the next time we sit down, I don't know, do we go through any examples or what do we do?
Yeah, well, Bill and I will probably give a couple of examples and maybe even take a few from the floor. Next week, I see what you're saying. So you want to know if you can come with some juicy stuff for an example?
I'm trying to check myself to make sure I'm doing it. In other words, part of the problem when we go through analyzing self is that we're in the way of ourselves.
Right.
You're trying to get us out of the way. Okay. And so how do I know when I'm out of the way? Do I just know? Or do I have to share something in order to, get through and understand whether I'm still blocking myself?
How about we address this after the meeting?
That's fun.
Yeah, because
I was just wondering if there was a group dynamic here. So that's all I was just trying to figure out was in the next couple of weeks when we're doing this, you know, is there a group dynamic? If not, then that's
do you have an answer for that? I'm not sure that I'm 100% clear on the question.
If he's going to share it in a fifth set with his sponsor, whomever, there shouldn't be a group dynamic related to what he brags.
Right. Or if there's something that's not too risky that maybe you could throw, that you would want to throw out to the group because you want to see some deeper insight, somebody could do that. If you don't do that, I wasn't expecting that to happen, but if somebody's having difficulty with a certain thing, but that's the kind of thing that you would share in your fifth step, and then who you're doing your fifth step with would help you draw out perhaps other things or see a deeper truth or whatever.
And if you don't, have someone outside,
right.
Sorry. If you don't have someone outside the meeting who's taking you through this, I think you're in big, big trouble. You know, so if that's what you mean by checking yourself, I think it's real important for us to be working with a sponsor or someone who's taken us through the steps, whether it be someone from this group or Bill and I or whatever. Just because we're kind of playing leader of the group or whatever, because, you know, the book's not talking for itself. I think it's also important that you're working really close with someone if you have any questions. And again, you know, we have those phone lists, don't we? And you can call me up. I'm sure you can call Bill or what have you.
I'm just remembering back when I did the first time with my sponsor that I had a lot of questions while I was doing the inventory.
Mm-hmm.
The whole fourth step, I had questions, and I worked on it for maybe 6 weeks. I thought I was ready. I'd call him up, and he said, "You're not ready," you know, and he corrected me, and he said, "You know, you've not gone deep enough, and have you thought of this, and thought of that?" And I just had questions. I didn't know how to do it completely. We didn't do it together. I still did it. He was very careful to say, you know, this is your work here. But then when he considered that I was finally ready, and I of course thought I'd been ready a long time, you know, we took almost the whole day, like 6 hours, and sat down, and then I went through the entire fifth step.
So you had feedback during the whole process?
I had feedback, and that was useful. And I think you either have a sponsor now that you can do that with, it, or you pick somebody here that you decide to do it with. You know.
So, you know, again, we'll try to do the first three columns between this week and next, and then next week maybe we'll take a couple examples, and then we'll get into the direction.
Three columns.
Yeah, unless you have a huge inventory. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure, unless I'm in delusion, that I can get through the first three columns. But again, if you can't, then that's fine. We'll cover directions for the fourth column next week, and I think we'll have enough time to get into fears. And I don't know if we want to... It kind of depends on the flow of the group if we get into sex and harms inventory next week, but we'll definitely cover the fourth column of resentment inventory, and we'll get into directions for fear inventory next week.
And you know, this is a process that will transform our lives, so it needs to be a certain commitment and a certain motivation that what I'd like to suggest is to write every day. Mike had said about the night thing, I encourage people to do it at night because sometimes we get up in the morning, we're late, and we're not able to do it. We can't do it at work, we can't do it as soon as we get home, we can't do it until the kids go to sleep. And just before we go to sleep, we can usually put out 20 minutes or a half hour or an hour or whatever to do some writing. So we need to make this a priority and set aside time every day to try to do some writing, or else the writing will fall behind.
Yeah, I don't have to be at work until 11 o'clock in the morning, so I sometimes forget that there are actually 9-to-5ers out there. But that's all I have to share for this week.
God, thank you for yesterday. Thank you for today. And thank you for tomorrow.
Thank you for keeping us sober. And please help me. Please help us to do your will.
Amen.
Hi, everybody. My name is Barefoot Bill. I'm a Native American alcoholic.
Barefoot Bill is very
old. That's a joke.
64.
Somebody had said that to a friend of mine. This girl that I know was said something about me, and they said, "I think I know who you're talking about." And she said to him, "Well, what's your name?" Or, "What's his name?" And they said, "It's some Indian name." And she goes, you mean Barefoot Bill? And she goes, "Yeah, that's it." And then a couple weeks ago, somebody called me Footless Bill. So that's new, too.
Footless Bill. You definitely be a member of the Cowies.
Yeah, exactly. We're on page 64, where the four-step starts. We had gotten into three columns of the resentment inventory, and I just want to kind of quickly cover that, and then we're going to cover the fourth column, and then we're going to give some examples. Or maybe I'll cover the three columns for those of you that weren't here last week, and then we'll give an example, and then we'll do the fourth column. I think that would sit better with me. Like I said, we're on page 64. I guess the first full paragraph starts with, "Therefore we start upon a personal inventory." This was step four. And then down toward, I guess in the middle of the page, or let me just do the whole thing. It talks about a business inventory. It kind of gives us an example of a business inventory. And then it says, "One object is to disclose damage or unsaleable goods and to get rid of it promptly and without regret," which is a good way of looking at the fourth and fifth step, as well as the middle six steps there. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about value. So we need to be fearless and thorough in doing this. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we search out the flaws in our makeup which cause our failure. Being convinced that self, not alcohol, but self, manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Like we saw in the third step, where it said that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. It talked about turning our will and our life over to the care of a higher power. And this is reiterating it again, saying that self is what had defeated us. Then it gets into the resentment inventory. Down toward the bottom of the page, it says we listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we are angry. If you look in your packet, the resentment inventory starts on page 9. On page 8, there's a resentment inventory prompt sheet that lists people, institutions, and principles, just to kind of give you an idea in case you're not familiar with, and maybe some other ideas that you might not have thought of on your own. On the page before that, 7, it gives definitions for words used in step 4. So both of those would be useful tools in going through the inventory. Especially the definitions part, when we get to the third column, would be good to have out as we do each of those columns. So that's the first column. Then the next line is the second column. We ask ourselves why we are angry. And then the third column starts, "In most cases it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relations, personal relationships including sex were hurt or threatened. So we are sore, we are burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which have been interfered with?" So it talks about, in the third column, what was hurt, threatened, or interfered with. And all those that I just mentioned in those few sentences are in the third column. And there's even a seventh item which says pride on your inventory. And pride is given in the example in the middle of page 65, toward the bottom on the right. One of the words there says pride, so that's included in the third column as well. Then it gives us an example of the first three columns. And then there's almost a full two-page pause that occurs that for me is one of the keys to the third step. It says, and I'm going to personalize this, after doing the first three columns, which we'll give an example of in a minute, it says, "I went back through my life, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When I was finished, I considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. And that's describing the first two columns in a resentment inventory. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as I ever got, which is talking about column two. The usual outcome was that the people continued to wrong me, column one and two, and I stayed sore, which was column three. Sometimes it was remorse, and then I was sore at myself. So you'll notice there that part of the first column, underneath the bold, I am resentful at, it includes regrets, because as we said last week, the word resentment means to feel again or to re-feel. The word resent comes from the word sentire, which means to feel, and you put re in front of the word, it means again, so the word resentment means to feel again, which is a little bit of a different definition than the average person probably thinks of a resentment as just anger, but if it's something that we're continually running through our mind that's bringing up some emotions, that would be a resentment. So that's why there are other words like being annoyed with, people that let us down. As we re-feel it, that's a resentment. When we first feel it, that's just kind of maybe anger or disappointment or frustration. But then over a period of time, when we keep re-feeling it, that's a resentment. And not only can we get free and process, you know, angers or hatreds or rages toward people, we can also inventory minor disruptions toward people, and we can be free of all that. It says, but the more I fought and tried to have my own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. My moments of triumph were short-lived. Something we also mentioned last week was that very often, especially something that I've seen in the resentment inventory, is that very often the things that frustrate us about other people are the things that we struggle with ourselves. And very often they are simply being a mirror for ourselves. Also, I've heard this really great description of resentment, that resentment is like taking poison and expecting the other person to get sick. Very often we have resentment toward people for years, sometimes even after they're dead. These people are no longer thinking about us in that situation. And we're carrying around all this negative venom and this frustration and this anger for years and years and years and years and years. And who's losing there? You know what I mean? My forgiving that person helps me. My working through that resentment toward the other person helps me. I'm not doing it necessarily for them. I'm doing it for me so I can get free of it. Because like it said back on page 64, it says resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. So it's not painting a happy picture of resentment. It's painting a picture of resentment that if we continue to carry resentment, we will inevitably go back to drinking, because alcohol helps us with that. And, you know, over the last bunch of months, we've been discussing all that. It says, my moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that may have been worthwhile? And then it continues painting 8 or 9 or 10 pretty ugly pictures of what resentment does to us. And again, we get free. We try to work through this and get free of this stuff for ourselves. You know, a lot of people sometimes can't get with that whole concept of, well, they deserve for me to be angry at them. Well, again, who's the person that's suffering through that? I'm suffering through that because I got this negative emotion bounce around. In many cases, that person is no longer even thinking about me. And maybe they are just a little bit or whatever, but you know, it's the kind of thing where I need to be free of that, because the more resentment I have going on, the more I'm headed back toward the next drink. Then at the bottom of the page, it says, we turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. So it sounds like these last columns of the resentment inventory are pretty important if they hold the key to our future. It says, we were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. And in the original manuscript, that said, we must be prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people, column one, really dominated us, column three. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, column two, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. Again, not painting a very happy picture of keeping resentments. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us, column one, were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like the symptoms, column two, the way they treated us, and the way they disturbed us, column three, They, like ourselves, were sick too. So again, it's pointing out that when a person does something that harms somebody else, just like when I do something that harms somebody else, I'm spiritually blocked off. I don't like that expression, spiritually sick, if you excuse me to changing a little bit of this. I don't think that our spirit can be sick. I think our spirit can be blocked off. I think that's why a 12-step says, having had a spiritual awakening, it's always been there, but now we awaken to the awareness of it. But that any person who causes harm is spiritually blocked off. They're not reacting out of love. They're reacting out of selfishness. They're reacting out of fear and a multitude of things based around fear. But that they like ourselves. And the more we see in this inventory, especially when we get to the harms inventory, about the ways that we harm people, the more we have an appreciation for the ways that we were blocked off and the things that we did to other people. And we begin to have a little bit more tolerance toward people who are perhaps responding out of fear or selfishness or whatever that harm us. Because we can see that, you know what, in many cases I did things a whole lot worse than some of the things that people have done to me. And another thing that's kind of interesting that I don't think was mentioned last week was that the one relationship that I harmed the most was my relationship with my higher power, because every single time I ever harmed somebody, I harmed my relationship with my higher power. There's no one person that I harmed as much as my relationship with my higher power. I guess you could say yourself, but it's kind of the same thing that, you know, it's kind of interesting because... again, in doing a bunch of fourth and fifth steps over the last few years, and in working with a lot of people, you gain a real appreciation for the way our inner workings get us to do certain things to other people. You know, I probably the greatest appreciation is listening to someone's fifth step, and you get to hear the way people harmed that person that's sitting in front of you. And, you know, we haven't gotten to the ninth step yet, but I have a deeper appreciation and a deeper respect and a deeper commitment toward wanting to make amends the more I listen to how people screwed people that have told fifth steps to me, you know what I mean, or harmed them or affected them in a negative way. It's an amazing thing. I'm not a big fan of putting off amends. I'm not a big fan of getting into amends before you do the steps before it, but in using amends a lot, and in seeing the ways that I've harmed people and the way other people have harmed people that I've heard fifth steps with, I'm a big fan of getting right into making amends and making all of them. Wow, I really went off there. I'm sorry. Okay, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Again, you know, it's almost like Mark was saying last Thursday that, you know, we're humans. We're limited beings. It's almost like expecting a deaf person to hear when you talk to them. You know, certain people are not capable of acting in a way that I want them to. That's not going to harm me. And the more that I go through life, the more I see that, you know, again, like myself, there's certain things, you know, I'm expecting somebody to do something that perhaps they're just not capable of. It's almost like I'm expecting to get blood from a stone. You know, these people that are the script violators, that they're not acting the way I want them to. And again, the more that we get into inventory, the more that we really see this very clearly. That in some cases, these people were not capable of treating me in the way that I wanted them to. Nor did they even know how I wanted them to treat me. And here's a little prayer. It says, I ask God to help me show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And again, in the original manuscript, that said that I would cheerfully grant a friend who has cancer. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man, you know, like myself, like it said earlier. This is someone who's spiritually blocked off. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry, thy will be done. So there's a couple prayers there. And you don't have to turn there, but on page 552, it talks about that another tool we can use to get over people that we resent is to pray that they get the happiness and the joy and the success and the peace that we would want for ourselves, that we pray that those kind of things happen for the other person that we resent. And by using those two tools, to pray for them that they find happiness and peace and joy, and to also pray for ourselves to have a better attitude toward these people, that's how we start moving away from softening our heart, seeing the situation a little bit differently, perhaps forgiving them, and just moving away from this resentment and not having it anymore. So again, there's a really big two-page pause between the third column and the fourth column that I think is really important in doing this inventory that after we finish doing the first three columns, we need to take that pause and perhaps pray for each of these people or just review what's going on here, see them a little bit differently, start heading toward the fourth column, which is what's my part in all this, disregarding them entirely, and we can move toward having a whole lot more freedom. It says we avoid retaliation or argument. Do we want to treat? We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us. And again, we have to ask God to help us with this, to have God show us how we can take a tolerant and kindly view of each and every one. So that's the first three columns. We're going to take a couple examples just to kind of walk everybody through the first three columns. Then we'll look at the fourth column and then do examples of that as well.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. For those that weren't here last week or maybe new entirely, last week when we went over the first three columns of the resentment inventory, we did it. We gave a very detailed explanation, probably even more detailed than I ever heard either one of us ever do. But if you're new here and you're wondering why Bill kind of went through it quickly, it's because as far as the directions for the first three columns are concerned, we had covered that last week, and he was just doing a review until we got to the top of bottom of 65, top of 66, which is where we left off last week. One thing I just want to touch on is something that Bill had covered, but it was probably about a year or two ago, it became so clear to me that the prayers on page 67 are not the same as the prayer on page 552 that woman from Freedom from Bondage is talking about. Again, like Bill said, the prayer that she's talking about, which is a very effective prayer, but I need to see the difference. The prayer that she's talking about is, I'm praying for other people. And the prayer that 67 is talking about is that I am to ask God to help me show other people, these people that I resent, the same patience, pity, tolerance, and I like to add the word compassion because I don't really care much for the word pity today. But I am to ask, this is a prayer, I'm to ask God, dear God, please show me how I can show the people that I resent the same patience, tolerance, and compassion that I would show a friend who's in the hospital with cancer. You know, I wouldn't. If I was visiting a friend who was dying in the hospital, and this person, if you pardon the expression, lashed out on me just because he or she wasn't having a good day or was in a lot of physical or emotional pain, knowing that, I wouldn't really think much of that. I would just kind of process it as, you know, they're really hurting today, and forgive them, Lord. They know not what they do. You know, but my entire life has been the direct opposite when it comes to this thing. I never considered that, and this prayer is asking me to consider that. You know, it's telling me to do the exact opposite of what I've done my whole life. You know, And that's the vision. You know, again, when we were talking about the first two steps, we referred to the word vision a lot, and we're going to refer to it a lot more when we get to 10-11. But that's the vision that I like to get in my head when I'm doing the work, and there is work between the third and the fourth column. You know? And having done this, having written a lot of inventory in the past few years, I might say the work, and I might be going out on a limb by saying this, but the work or the prayers or the considerations that I need to be working with between the third and the fourth column are probably just as, if not more important than the writing that's gone on the paper already. You know, in the beginning, I skimped over this stuff in the middle, so to speak, and it's really important. again, like we did with the first three steps, I take the words, sentences, and paragraphs from the bottom of 65 over to 67, and I turn as many statements as I can into questions and ask them if they apply to me. Or, in this case, if I'm currently having this type of attitude. You want to get into examples now?
Yeah, why don't we do some examples. I'm going to take one from the book on page 65. I'm going to take one from my past, and Mike has one. And then we'll ask if it's not clear on how this goes so far. And then we'll do the fourth column. The one example I want to take from on page 65, the one example there, is my employer. And it says, and like we had said last week, each of these columns, including each individual column in the third column, you go top to bottom. You do not go across. You'll read it across when you do your fifth step, but we go top to bottom. So my employer is in the first column. I have a resentment for my past, which I no longer have, but I want to use it because it's a really good example. I had a resentment toward the police, and Mike has a resentment, which is?
It's actually not a resentment. It's, again, we talked about last week how, at least when I do this today, I take a look at any resentments, angers, hurts, judgments towards myself and others, regrets, dislikes, or grudges, or annoyances, however you want to call it. So, I have a dislike in regards to being overweight. So if you need to label the first column, it would be a resentment or a dislike towards myself.
And then, again, top to bottom, first column. Second column, the example in the inventory, it says, threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense account. I had a resentment toward the police because they were locking me up. And preventing me from doing whatever I wanted to do. And how about with the resentment toward yourself?
The second column is for being overweight.
And when we do these columns, especially the second and fourth column of the resentment inventory, we just do bullet statements. We don't have to expand on a whole story. You can't fit all that in a box. Just do bullet statements. To refresh your memory, when you're going to do your fifth step, you can expand upon it all you want during the fifth step. But just do short bullet statements. As a matter of fact, a gentleman who I had hooked up with down in Philly recommended in the second column to just use one word. Because then it makes you think about it. And very often, you can pretty much boil it down to one word. And I'm not necessarily saying you have to do that, but I think it's just important to just use bullet statements just to refresh your memory so that when you do your fifth step, you can rattle it off. Again, in the fourth column there, too. All right, now, third column. They only give a couple. It's funny because you might notice on page 65, he kind of gives us two examples of how to do this. The first example is with Mr. Brown, where with the second column, it gives, second column has a third column associated with each one. And then as he goes along, I don't know if he got lazy or if he was trying to give us two examples, but after a while, he lists a bunch of things in column two, but only gives us one or two things in column three. So I don't know if he was giving us two different examples or if he just got lazy as he was doing this. But the one that I recommend is sort of the first one, where you have something in the second column and stuff in the third column associated with it. Because like we were saying last week, in some cases you might have more than one resentment toward a certain person. As a matter of fact, usually we do toward people that are very close to us. And we would put the name and then have a few things in column two. And then, a couple lines in column one might be empty because it continues the first name. Like, toward my mom, if I have three resentments toward her, I would just have my mom in the first column and then two columns blank. And then the second column would be three things that I have resentments toward her for. And believe me, it was more than three. But and then in the third column, again, top to bottom, which each of those individual columns in column three. So do you think that this person, that was just an example of an inventory. That's not necessarily any specific person's inventory. But do you think that that when the employer threatens to fire the person for drinking and padding their expense account, that it affects their self-esteem, that it affects how they feel about themselves, probably does. And again, the third column would be just check marks, because it says, you know, was this affected? It's a yes or no. So a check means that it was affected. No check means that it wasn't. Now, how about with the police? It certainly affected my self-esteem, them locking me up all the time. And how about with your being overweight? Does that affect your self-esteem?
Yes.
One, two, three.
Yes.
Okay, now how about the pocketbook? Again, if you stay with the definitions, a couple pages before the resentment inventory, it's very helpful when doing this third column. But with the pocketbook, it's of a financial or material nature. Do you think threatening to fire this person would affect their pocketbook?
Yes.
I'm sure they weren't getting a raise anytime soon, besides the fact that they're probably not going to have a job. Them locking me up affects my pocketbook because I might not have a job because I'll be in the joint. How about with you being overweight? Does that affect your pocketbook?
No.
Were there times when you overate and you weren't very motivated to work when you were going back to work?
No, not that I can recall.
All right, and with security, there's two kinds of security. There's emotional security and financial security. What's interesting, I don't know why I keep jumping ahead to the ninth step, but what's interesting about the ninth step is that I again have a new appreciation for amends, because what I started seeing in the ways that I harmed people was that the people that were closest to me, especially like my family, my parents, people like that, my ex-wives, plural, one of the things that I stole from them was their emotional security, because they weren't sure when they were going to get a phone call about me dead or what kind of condition I'd be in when I'd showed up at family functions. It still hurts me on some level to think about the ways that I emotionally affected my parents and the people that were close to me, the people that loved me and that I loved. That was the way that I treated them. And, you know, again, that's why I'm a big fan of making amends. But, okay, financial and emotional security, I'm sure it did with him, with his job, with the police. It especially affected my emotional security because I was always really nervous if there was a policeman around, because I knew that they were there for me. How about with being overweight?
Yes.
Okay, ambitions is... at the time when the resentment, the occurrence happened, did it affect what I wanted in the future? Like, our ambitions is something that we want in the future. So certainly this person wanted to have this job. So the boss possibly firing them for padding the account for drinking is affecting their ambitions. Because, and also very often our ambition is that we don't want the person to act the way they're acting. So most often ambitions is checked off here, as well as personal relations, because, you know, obviously if the boss is going to threaten me for padding my expense account, that's going to affect my relationship with that person. So those two are very often affected most of the time through these inventories. And with the police, did it affect my ambition? Certainly it did. I didn't want to be in jail. Can't speak for anybody else. How about to your ambitions with being overweight?
Yes.
And with pride, do you think this person's pride was affected with their job perhaps being lost?
Yes.
I think it was. Certainly with the police deal and with yourself being overweight?
Yes.
And with personal relations, again, I'm sure this person's personal relations, especially with the boss and maybe even with other people like their coworkers, or even with the wife, because now they might be about to lose the job again and things aren't going too well. So I think the personal relations were affected. Personal relations with the police thing. Another way of looking at the police thing was that something that you don't know about me was that very often if I was out and I found out that you were a policeman, I had a problem with you without even talking to you. So it certainly affected personal relations. How about with your being overweight?
Yeah.
And sex relations with the threatening to be fired for padding the expense account for drinking. I think it's possible that their sex relations would be affected, because I'm sure the wifey poo wasn't too happy about the fact that he might be losing another job and they might have to go work or something like that. So that's kind of iffy. Does the group think that it would apply in this situation?
Yes.
Right. The voice of the group.
The voice of the group.
And thank you. No, it's all right. I appreciate you speaking up. Cool. And with the police, I don't believe that sexual relations was involved. I really, at that period of time, wasn't dating anymore. I was having a lot of sex, but it wasn't with anybody else. I had also done a study one time, and somebody said that if I had gotten locked up, I might be having more sex, but I'm not going to go there. And in my case, that didn't apply, so I'm not going to check that off. And how about with your being overweight? Does that affect your sex relations? Okay. So you'll see there that in one case, everybody was checked off. In another case, one was missing. In another case, another box was missing, but they were different. So in a lot of cases, all those areas are going to be affected, but not in all cases. So... does anybody have any questions? Yeah.
When I did my fifth step, was I supposed to read, all right, well, James, when I was told, list the asshole and apology, you know what I mean, and what the asshole did to you, and then what part of self did it affect? it's not supposed to be funny, so it was quiet.
It's very funny.
and I started to read off some of these things, but then I didn't read them off anymore. Are you supposed to read off every part that affected you? Read them out loud again, too? My self-esteem was affected, my pocketbook was... Because it was like, kept on coming up. Like, all these things were constantly affected. I mean, every person, it was every one of them were affected in one way or another. Are you supposed to constantly read them over and over again?
As a person listening to the fifth step, once we begin to see a pattern, as you had talked about, the repetitiveness of it, I don't necessarily make them read it over and over again. As long as they're able, sometimes what I do with people, I don't do this with everyone, but I'll crack the toughest one first. Usually it's like towards mom or towards dad. And again, you can't do that with everyone. I just kind of go with my intuition nowadays, and it depends on the other person. And usually when you crack the biggie one wide open, did I just say biggie one? And
use it appropriately.
And if they're able to see the truth, which we're going to get to in the fourth column, then sometimes all I have them do is just read the first column, the second column, and then jump right to the fourth column, because what we're after is the exact nature of the wrong. So once they see the pattern and it begins to get really repetitive, I don't make them sit there and just read it over and over again.
What I try to do in here in Fifth Steps is make sure that the person has an understanding of those columns. So maybe for the first page, maybe the first two pages, I'll have them go through that. But then when I see that they really are getting those columns, like you said, it's just kind of redundant.
Yeah.
You know, I might have them start by doing that, and might kind of say that. But what I look for is, you know, do they have an understanding of each one of those? If they do, they probably filled it out correctly, and then we don't have to necessarily as we go along. And you know, in some cases, I might like look to see if one of them is checked off because I think definitely one applies. And if they don't have it, I'll ask them about it, and we'll talk about it. And in some cases, they'll check it off. In some cases, they'll take a check off because. I would say, you know, you had, sexual life checked off. Why? And, you know, you kind of get into it. And
I had actually literally write every single one of these things down. Mm-hmm. I didn't just check them off. I really wrote pocketbook, sex relationship, pride, ambition.
Right, and that's just another way of doing it.
I wrote every single one down.
Right, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another way of doing it.
Right. This. I like this rhythm.
Yeah, it's sort of a time saver or whatever. You know, it's just another way. I've even seen sheets where you explained all of those, but my understanding of the way the book says, it says, you know, were these things affected? It doesn't say, how were they affected? It says, were they affected? So I try to be a purist with what is the book saying. And you'll see in some of the other inventories, I try to be a purist in what the book is saying and how to do an inventory. And, you know, there's other ways of doing it. I don't know if one is good or one is bad. But like I had said last week, I saw a resentment inventory that only had the first three columns and didn't have the fourth column. I'd like to suggest that's a bad inventory. But I haven't seen too many bad inventories. In some way, it's just someone's perspective of what it's saying, and it still draws out what's necessary.
Over the years, I've become, I guess, a little less pure than Bill when it comes to this. I've
yeah, it's still superior. No.
I've kind of gone a little bit deeper than the essence of what the book talks about. Just with the third column, someone showed me how to write the third column out, or if you will, an extended third column. And I don't like to throw that term around because people get confused by it. But all it is exactly like Bill said, to write out how each of these seven areas of self, or how my ego caught a hold of it, and what that sounds like. And that's how I write inventory today. And just so you get a clear idea of what I'm talking about, I'm just going to read mine again as I did the third column. So again, I dislike myself I dislike the fact that I'm overweight, and what it affects is my self-esteem, which is who I think I am. And this is the high part of self-esteem that it affects. The third column is where I get to take a look at the committee that's in my head. When you do something to me, automatically the chatter starts going on up here. You know, the committee starts to get together and they take a vote, and automatically you get voted out. So this is what the committee sounds like in my head towards this dislike or resentment, if you will, of being overweight. And this is the high self-esteem aspect. This is what the ego says. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm spiritual. Spiritual men aren't overweight. This is the low self-esteem aspect. I am a fraud in AA because I'm overweight, and there's a fear attached to that. See, as you guys can probably tell right now, none of this stuff is true. But this is what my ego tells me. This is the lie that I have to believe in order to fall into the delusion of a regret or a resentment. Affects my ambitions, what I want. I want to be liked, respected, and looked up to. I don't want to look bad. And again, a fear attached to that. Emotional security, what I need to be okay. I need a physically fit body to be okay. I need others to see me differently than I am. Personal relationships, my friends shouldn't see me unfit. Fear of looking bad. Sex relations, my wife should be physically attracted to me. I need a fit body to be attractive to my wife, for her to love me. And pride, who you think I am. Remember, self-esteem is who I think I am or what I think about myself, and pride is who you think I am or what I think you're thinking about me. God forbid I think you're thinking about me. Oh, God. Pride.
That goes on and on, pretty much. And again, like we said last week, that's not necessarily, you know, a genuine definition of the word pride, but most often for an alcoholic, we get our pride from what other people think of us. If you like me, then I feel better about myself. If you don't like me, then usually I don't have a lot of pride.
Pride. No one should think I'm not spiritually fit because I'm not physically fit. You know. And what I like explaining to people is that, just say, for example, let's take a round number of 100 resentments. You know, 100 different things listed in column 2. And let's say, on an average, we have 5 things in column 3 that are affected. 5 out of 7 areas of self on an average that are hurt, threatened, or interfered with. So you take 5 times 100 and you get 500. You know, and you wonder why the heck we shoot ourselves in the head and not in the foot, because of all the voices that are going on in our head. You know, if I have all this stuff that I read to you, or that I just read to you, if I have that going on 500-fold, I mean, God, you wonder why the heck they locked us up. You know? So that's why for me, and again, I wrote a bunch of inventory. I wrote inventory several times before I wrote it like this. But when I finally, and I do not show this to new people, I think the majority of people in this room, if not all the people in this room, have written a 4-column resentment inventory before. So I do not share this with a person who's never been through the steps before, and in most cases, I don't even get in, get into this with them until they've written inventory at least two or three times before. But this has been very effective for me to just see the voices, the lies, to see the, you know, Mark calls it the chatter of a thousand monkeys, you know, and it's that whole committee system that Dr. Paul, who was the author of Dr. Addict Alcoholic, who passed away a couple of years ago, he used to talk about how the committee would wake him up in the morning. And man, that is so true for me. You know, it's so true.
And that's why if we can process it, see, and get a different look at this and have some forgiveness and kind of soften our heart toward the person and also see what our part in it is, which most often brought about it in the first place, we're now free of all this. And we don't have the 500 characters rattling around our head all day. And, you know, it's these inventories are just so powerful in bringing about a lot of freedom and brought a lot of peace, because we don't have a lot of this stuff rattling around. Does anybody have any questions or something that's not clear, or do they think something doesn't apply that maybe we can chew up and spit out, maybe? Is everything clear?
Great to put it back. I don't want to miss it. I think it'll be back.
Right, so now the fourth column, middle of page 57 or 67. You want to do it?
Okay, it says, referring to our list again, and this is a very important statement. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. So we're going to cover up the first three columns, if you will. You know, we don't care about what the other person did anymore. Hopefully by this time we've gotten some forgiveness in our heart, and we're able to see the other person as a spiritually blocked off person as myself. Because guess what? If I wasn't spiritually blocked off, I wouldn't have to be writing this inventory. You know, I like to think of myself today as a little less spiritually blocked off as I was a couple of years ago, hence the inventories that I write today are nowhere as near as big as they used to be. But, you know, it's that whole thing of if I could spot it, I got it. If I see it, I could be it. You know, if I'm pointing a finger at you, it's the whole spiritual mirror thing. It's coming right back at me. You know, if I think you're sick, then automatically that's a judgment. I must be spiritually sick or blocked off too.
So what's kind of interesting is in the first three columns, this is all information we've always known. You know, I knew who I was pissed at and why and how it affected me. None of this is new information. But then this last column is a perspective that I rarely, if ever, considered. And that's, for me, the beauty of this last column is, you know, in most cases, and especially the more you replay it in your head over the years, you completely separate yourself from the situation. They're the evil one. You are pure as the driven snow. You're the most wonderful person. It's hard to believe they could do that to somebody like me. And we start to see it a little bit differently. And like Mike said, this is the column of truth. This third column, you could rattle off all this stuff. The second column, you could rattle off all this stuff. But when you get to that last column, that's when you shine the light of God's truth finally on it.
Yeah, I really believe that we don't really begin to grow spiritually until we get to this fourth column. Because I think, as we had made reference to last week, is that the first column is just dealing with the physical aspect. It's just dealing with the body, so to speak, another person, institution, or principle. And the second column is dealing with my mind, you know. And the third column, the things that the resentment affects within me, is dealing with my emotions. So remember, there we have four dimensions. Bill said in his story, Bill said on page 8 and on page 25, he referred to it as the fourth dimension of existence. On one page, he said that we're going to be catapulted into the fourth dimension of existence. So, from the third column to the fourth column, this is where we get to be catapulted into the fourth dimension of existence, which is the spiritual dimension. Or as we're going to find out in the tenth step, it's the world of the spirit. This is where truth is found. So again, we set aside the first three columns and we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Do you have a good definition for resolutely?
No, but I'll go to my big book dictionary.
All right. Someone want to hum the Jeopardy music?
Resolutely means faithfully, marked by firm determination and without doubt.
Good definition. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. And that can also be termed as what my thinking was. You know, the main problem centers in the mind. So my mistake usually comes from my thought process. So if you could, in conjunction, look at page 9 of the handout packet, fourth column. And it says, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Again, he's repeating himself. Where were we to blame? And that's a hard deal for alcoholics to look at. Where am I to blame? I always like pointing the blame at you. Instead, this is asks me to go within and touch truth and see where I'm to blame in this. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, what I did, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. So again, if you look at your sheet in the fourth column, it just simply repeats the same thing that's found on page 67, paragraph 2. There's really four words that I like to focus on in the fourth column, because I think they, if I can find where I had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, I think it answers all the rest of the questions. If I can find, and this is something that I didn't discover right away or wasn't told to me right away, but it says, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? It doesn't say, were we? The first inventory sheets that I came into contact with, the fourth column was just like the third column, and it was just a checkmark box. That's okay for seeing patterns, but it doesn't give me much information for my eight-step list, you know, and it doesn't really smash home to me the truth of the fact that with 99.9% of all my resentments, I don't like to use the word played a part, but for a lack of a better way of saying it, for 99.9% of all my resentments, I played a part with every single one. And I actually got the ball rolling with most of them. Now, I don't know if we talked about this last week, but in the case of a child or a person who's been abused or sexually abused, I don't play a part in that. At least in the physical act of it. But what I do play a part in is what I do with that resentment today. Okay?
Or later on in life.
Right. If something happened in that area of my life to me, let's say 25 years ago, why have I been carrying on to this for 25 years? You know, why am I unwilling to let this go and forgive the other person? You know, I must be using it for a reason. You know, so again, if I'm working with a person that's been abused or sexually molested, I get very clear with them that you were not at fault for that. You are not to blame. You're not a bad person, and chances are you did absolutely nothing to bring that about. But let's get free of that today. You know, let's see why you're still holding on to it.
Something that's really kind of strange, but in hearing a lot of fifth steps, you hear about people who were molested as children and as they became adults, they started molesting people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard for me to relate to, because you would think, having been through it themselves, that they would never want to expose that to somebody or do the same to another person, perhaps. But for some reason, perhaps it's just that, because that's all they've ever known, that for some reason it perpetuates. And in another instance, like of, very often, perhaps someone was molested as a child, and then when they grow up, they use that as an excuse to abuse the opposite sex in their sex life in going forward. You know, I can just treat men any way I want to because, you know, my uncle did this when I was 10 years old. You know, and that's the part that we play in it. We use it as an excuse for behavior later on in life. So that's the part that we play. Like Mike said, it's very important to realize we did not play a part in it when we were a child. But how are we using that now and going forward? Sometimes we use it as an excuse to not go to school. Sometimes we use it as an excuse to go to job. You know, that there's ways that it manifests later on in life. It's sort of like Howard uses a really cool example of like a phone number that, you know, you meet some cute girl and you get her phone number and you start calling her and you don't need to look at the paper anymore. You just have it memorized. And then 6 months later, you guys got kind of not interested in them anymore. And a year goes by and you want to call them, you don't have it in your head anymore because you're not using it anymore. Sometimes with resentment, as time goes by, we're using it as an excuse later on in life. And if we weren't using it, it wouldn't be in our system anymore. So later on in life, we do use that as an excuse for certain behavior and certain things. All right, now the fourth column. Mike just read it. Again, you know, it's all pretty much right there, word for word. We disregard the other person entirely. Again, there's a two-page pause. We've now prayed for these people. We've now tried to get a better attitude toward these people, perhaps started to feel a sense of forgiveness. And then now we look at this last column, disregarding the other person entirely. Where was I to blame? What was my part in this? So, obviously, for drinking on the job and paying the expense account, that's very selfish. I'm sure they had to cover up some things and lie in order to be able to do that with the expense account. That was dishonest. Certainly some self-seeking there. Very often there's fear behind, you know, when you're doing something like that, you have fear of being found out. But also something that might have set the ball rolling to begin with was that the reason why I was taking the money to begin with was because I had a fear of not having enough money. So now I have to steal it in order to get it. So that's kind of where we start setting the ball rolling. And that's kind of, I'm not going to write all that down, but that's kind of, you know, how we look at the fourth column here. And with the police, I always had something illegal in my pocket. I was always ripping people off. I was always involved with bikers and people of perhaps reputation where the police would be needed. Yada, yada, yada. And there was fear involved in that because... I was afraid that they weren't going to let me do whatever I wanted to do, and I just always just did whatever I wanted to do. If you had a problem with that, you just weren't around much. And how about with the fourth column with the resentment toward yourself for being overweight?
Selfish, relying on self rather than God and others for help. Unwillingness to go to OA and playing God. I think I can lose weight on my own power. You don't have to write all that down.
Wait a minute, can you repeat that? No, I'm just kidding.
Get the tape.
So what's interesting about this is that it doesn't matter who did these things. Because in some cases, let's say I have resentment toward Paul because he stole money from me. If Steve stole money from me, I had a resentment toward him. So it wasn't the person. It was what they did, which was the second column that I had resentment toward. Then in the third column, I found out that it wasn't what they did and it wasn't the person. What it was how I chose to internalize and personalize what they did. Now, let me give you a good example of that. I'm sure we've all experienced this. Let's say it's Monday. I had kind of a bad weekend. I'm running a little bit late for work. I'm in traffic and somebody cuts me off. I freak. And now I have resentment toward this person. Now, a couple months go by and it's a Friday. I'm not running late. I'm a little bit more on a spiritual beam. I have a Friday attitude going, you know what I mean? I'm in traffic, the same person cuts me off, same situation, I don't even think twice about it. Now, how is it possible that the exact same thing happened? And the explanation is that because in the first case I chose to personalize and internalize what had happened in a certain way, And in the second case, I chose not to. So it wasn't even what they did or who did it. It was how I chose to internalize it that brought this about. And then the fourth column takes it even further. You know, in the case of the employer, if this guy wasn't drinking on the job and petting and stealing and dishonest and all of that, they wouldn't have had this resentment to begin with. So in the first example, that person set the ball rolling to begin with. If they weren't doing what they were doing, the rest of this would have never occurred and they wouldn't have had this resentment. Same thing with the police thing. If I wasn't doing things that were always illegal and I wasn't involving people that were doing illegal things and I wasn't just doing whatever I wanted to do, the police wouldn't have been locking me up. I wouldn't have had the resentment toward them. And the same thing with the case with Mike. He wouldn't have a resentment toward himself because he'd be doing something positive in bringing about changing what the situation was. It didn't have anything to do with anything else but the fact that he contributed to it happening to begin with. If he was taking the actions. That's something that someone had come to me and they were having a bad time, they were having problems finding a job, this and that. And my first question to him was, well, what are you doing about finding a job? Well, you know, I'm not really doing that much. Well, I talked to him about, you know, that's where this is coming from. That's where this problem that you're having with yourself is coming from, is that you're not doing anything about it. It's not that you don't have a job, it's that you're not doing anything about it. And what that person did was they worked out a resume, they started sending them, they started feeling good because they were finally doing something about it. They saw that the situation was out of their control about whether anything responded to a resume or not, but they were finally doing something about it and they weren't beating themselves up over it anymore. So, you know, it's just interesting how we play the part, and just as importantly, but sometimes a little bit less importantly, how we choose to internalize and personalize it, that's the part that we play in it. And again, you know, Mike was talking about how, you know, it says that our troubles are of our own making. Sometimes we don't necessarily contribute to it directly, but how we choose to look at the situation is causing the trouble ourselves, because there's other ways of looking at it. You know, I can look at somebody as, maybe their wife just left them. Maybe their mother just died. You know, I don't know what somebody's situation is when they blast past me in traffic. You know, I can look at them and say, oh, they're jerks and they're out to get me and they're disrespecting me. Or I can say, you know what, maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they're on the way to the hospital because somebody loved a child, something, you know what I mean? I don't know what happened, but I can have a different perspective toward it, and then all of a sudden I'm not creating this problem. I don't have this resentment all day, all month, all year. You know what I mean? In a lot of cases, I know that's the way I was. I'm sure nobody here can relate. But, you know, again, all our troubles of our own making, either because of something we contributed to it or because of the way we choose to look at the situation. And we can get a different perspective. And this tool really helps with all that and to see the truth and to see what's really going on here. And it's a beautiful thing. It's an incredible thing. You know, again, intellectually, sometimes it just doesn't necessarily make sense. But then when we participate and have an experience and take some action, it's unbelievable the kind of freedom that we could have in doing something like this. Again, is there any questions or any think maybe a situation doesn't apply or something that maybe is just not clear?
You want to do the rest of the fourth column?